You are listening to the second episode of the Bridge Commission Audio Walks, a new annual commission that marks the opening of the Serpentine Sackler Gallery. 12 internationally acclaimed authors have been asked to write short stories lasting for the duration of the walk between the two buildings. You will be able to download a new story each month from the Serpentine Gallery's website, serpentinegalleries.org. At the end of the year, you will have a collection of new writing to add to the books you already own. This story was written by the American poet, novelist, essayist, and critic Ben Lerner. It was read by author Sheila Hetty. Ben Lerner is the author of Leaving the Atocha Station and several books of poetry. The Bridge Commission audio walks are supported by Bloomberg. Thank you for listening. For more information about the Bridge Commission audio walks, visit serpentinegalleries.org.
Alex and I moved slowly south along the park in silence. Given the storm, the normalcy felt bizarre. A tourist asked me to take her and her friend's picture on the steps of the Met. I looked into the viewfinder and half expected to see inside their bodies. The pushcarts were outselling pretzels and hot dogs. There were joggers and dog walkers and nannies pushing multiples and $1,000 strollers. There was nothing in the speech or laughter or arguments I overheard to indicate crisis or emergency. No erratic behavior among the squirrels or passerines. Around 59th Street, we decided we should determine how to get a bus back to Brooklyn, but it was harder to figure out on my phone than I expected, and my network connection was slow, intermittent. I realized I couldn't smell the sad horses that were normally hitched to the carriages along Central Park South. Where did they hide them in the storm? We decided to keep heading downtown, and as night fell, I told Alex we should just take another taxi, although, according to the GYN, the recent bleeding was unrelated to physical exertion. I thought she should take it relatively easy until she'd made it out of the first trimester. It was impossible, however, to hail a cab, although there was a steady stream of them. I wasn't sure if this was because it was around 5 o'clock, when the cabs have their shift change, or because they didn't want to head south because of the storm. Regardless, innumerable yellow cabs passed us, but they were all off duty. Still, I was confident we'd get one eventually, if we just kept trying as we walked. I raised my arm each time I saw one approaching, and finally in the upper 30s one stopped, albeit tentatively. At the very mention of the word Brooklyn, however, he sped away. This happened 2 more times, and soon we arrived on the threshold of electrification, the streets below us dark. Reader, we walked on. A couple of restaurants and bars were open, selling drinks, at least by candlelight. There was a diverse crowd on the corner of 18th, and when we joined it, we saw that people were taking bottles of water from 10 or 12 boxes that somebody had stacked there, probably the National Guard. No cab would stop and Alex had to pee. When we got to Union Square, a variety of food trucks were operating, and people were charging their cell phones on their outlets. FEMA seemed to be using the park as a kind of hub. Miraculously, the giant Whole Foods had power, the illumination startling amid all the dark buildings. I hadn't been there since the night before the last hurricane. I waited outside while Alex went to the bathroom. A reporter was filming a segment nearby, and I walked within range of the camera and tungsten lights and waved. Maybe you saw me. When Alex emerged from the store, a bus stopped on the corner, but it was so full only the first few people in line were allowed on. It was heading south, but we had no reason to think it would ferry us to Brooklyn. I asked a cop on the corner of Broadway and 15th how we could get back to Brooklyn, and he just shrugged dismissively. To my surprise, I felt a surge of rage, fantasized about striking him, and only then realized how many contradictory emotions were colliding and recombining within me. My smile was probably strange. Alex asked if I was okay. Between Whole Foods and the various generators police and city trucks were using, Union Square had been relatively bright. As we walked further south, the dark was enveloping, cut less and less frequently by headlights. Driving in the unregulated night was dangerous. Trying to remember the bustling uptown neighborhoods we'd left an hour or two ago, let alone the Brooklyn we'd set out from early that afternoon, was like trying to recall a different epoch. The sense of stability, the Upper East Side architecture, French, Renaissance, and Federal, seemed to belong to a former age, innocent and gilded, while the ultrasound technology seemed to me in the dark like a premonition from the future. Both were too alien to integrate into a narrative. I felt equidistant from all my memories as my sense of time collapsed, blue sparks from Monique's mouth when she bit down on wintergreen candy. Hallucinating from a fever in Mexico City. Watching the shuttle disaster on live TV. I looked up at the looming buildings whose presence I could now sense more than see, and wondered how many people were still inside them. Here and there you could perceive a bee move across the window, a flame, the glow of an LED, but the overall effect was of emptiness. I told Alex I felt fine. For some reason, I imagined there were Sabbath elevators in each building, imagined that they were still quietly running, drawing their power from some other source, some other time. We must have headed east as streets had dead-ended, because we were on Lafayette and Canal when two men approached us, at least one of them drunk, and asked for money. In the absence of streetlights and established order, there was a long moment in which I couldn't tell if they were begging or threatening to rob us, making a demand. Relations were newly indeterminate, the cues hard for me to read, as if, along with power, we'd lost a kind of social proprioception. I said I didn't have any, and the man persisted, but without any explicit threat. Before I could decide what to do or say, Alex gave the men a couple of dollars, and they vanished. It was getting cold. Eventually, we saw a bright glow to the east among the dark towers of the financial district. Later, we would learn it was Goldman Sachs. See photographs in which the only illuminated building in the skyline was the investment banking firm, an image I'd use for the cover of my book. Not the one I was contracted to write about fabrication, but the one I've written in its place for you, to you, on the very edge of fiction. Its generators must have been immense, or did they have special access to a secret grid? Soon we were heading south and west, and the dark felt briefly total. I thought of Marfa, the buildings around me like permanent installations in the desert night. I tried to describe this feeling to Alex, but my voice sounded weird in the lightless streets. Loud, conspicuous, although there was plenty of other noise. Somebody was hammering something nearby. I could hear but not see a helicopter. The slow, high-pitched braking of a large truck in the near distance sounded submarine, like whale song. A cab surprised us as we turned into Park Place, the felt absence of the twin towers now difficult to distinguish from the invisible buildings. I had the sensation that if power were suddenly restored, the towers would be there, swaying a little. Although I could see that someone was in the back of the car, someone I imagined as on both sides of the poem. Bernard and Natalie's daughter, Liza, Ari. I tried to hail the cab. I'd heard cabs could pick up multiple fares as a result of the storm, fares from multiple worlds, but it didn't stop for us. I asked Alex how she was holding up. She said that she was fine, but I knew she was tired and cold. What if she were 8 months pregnant and I'd accidentally led her into the state of nature? You haven't led me anywhere, she said, laughing, when I expressed the concern aloud. There was a small mammal developing within her. This was the week for taste buds, teeth buds. We would work out my involvement as we went along. A bodega was weakly illuminated by a generator, and I went in to get a bottle of water and a couple of granola bars as we hadn't eaten since our early lunch. There was a strong smell of vegetable rot. The refrigerated cases had all been emptied, but there was some old produce on a shelf, and the floors were still wet. I didn't see any water, but when I asked for it, the man behind the counter produced a large bottle. I asked him how much it was, and he said $10. I saw other goods he had secured behind the counter, like the treasures that they were. Packages of batteries, flashlights, strike-anywhere matches, Cliff bars, instant coffee. I asked the price of each in turn, and each time he said $10, smiling. A few miles away, they would cost no more than before the storm. Prices rise in the dark. I bought the water and a Luna bar for Alex with the weakening currency, and we resumed our walk. As we passed City Hall and approached the Brooklyn Bridge, there were plenty of people in headlights. Police were directing traffic, and there were clusters of city trucks, fire, ambulances, sanitation, etc. There were two military jeeps parked on Center Street. Brooklyn was illuminated across the river, sparkling in a different era. We had already walked some 7 miles, having not planned to walk more than one. I asked Alex if she wanted me to inquire about a bus, but she said no, that she'd prefer to do it all. A steady current of people attired in the usual costumes was entering the walkway onto the bridge, and there was a strange energy crackling among us, part parade, part flight, part protest. Each woman I imagined as pregnant, Then I imagined all of us were dead, floating over London Bridge. What I mean is that our faceless presences were flickering, everyone disintegrated, yet part of the scheme. I'm quoting now like John Gillespie McGee. When we were over the water, under the cables, we stopped and looked back. Uptown, the city was brighter than ever, although as you looked north, you saw the darkened projects against the light. They looked two-dimensional, like cardboard cutouts in a stagecraft foreground. Lower Manhattan was black behind us, its densities intuitive. The fireworks celebrating the completion of the bridge exploded above us in 1883, spidering out across the page. The moon is high in the sky, and you can see its light on the water.